Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, February 15th. I truly try to lead as a servant leader. Taurus, right fit for MISD Executive Director of Athletics. The story was written by Christopher Hadorn, staff writer. Wes Taurus was prophetic when he first moved to Midland in 2013. Taurus told his wife Shannon during their move from Amarillo to the Tall City that he would one day be the Midland ISD Executive Director of Athletics. Taurus had just been hired as Midland High girls basketball coach and girls athletic coordinator after a 5-year stint as head coach of the Amarillo Caprock girls basketball program. Taurus's dream from 11 years ago became a reality on Tuesday when the Midland ISD Board of Trustees unanimously approved his promotion to Midland ISD Executive Director of Athletics. Taurus had served as Midland ISD Director of Athletics since August 2020 after leaving the coaching ranks when he helmed the MHS girls basketball program. Taurus takes over for his mentor, Blake Felt, who retired at the end of December 2023 following a 5.5-year stint as MISD Executive Director of Athletics. Bill Boyd, a former Lee girls basketball coach, has served as interim executive director of athletics since the start of the calendar year. MISD Superintendent Dr. Stephanie Howard said Taurus met the important criteria for the position, which included understanding West Texas, having a good relationship with the district, leadership qualities, and the ability to solve problems when the district runs into barriers. Quote, "My leadership style, as I explained to the committee, is to support our coaches," Taurus said. "From the day I took this job, I always told myself, I don't want to forget where I was because I was in those shoes. We've put in processes and things in place to make their jobs easier. They don't have to come to our offices anymore. Our coaches and our staffs, they have limited time, and the free time they do have, I don't want them spending time driving to the athletic office. We don't want that. We've made those processes easier. We serve them. I truly try to lead as a servant leader. I serve our coaches because we've got some great ones in place and a lot of great things happening," end quote. Howard said Taurus was so popular that a committee of human resources personnel, Deputy Superintendent Roberto Cedillo, principals Mitch Etzel of Legacy High School and Jennifer Siebert of Midland High School, and district coaches such as Legacy football coach Clint Hartman, Midland High School football coach Thad Fortune, Midland High softball coach Shwanda Vines, and Legacy assistant coach Hillary Ivanhoe unanimously approved him in the hiring process. Quote, "He's one of ours, and any time we can promote from within, and we have the right person to promote from within, that's absolutely what we want to do," Howard said. Continuing the quote, "Secondly, he was a unanimous selection of the committee, and when you have that many head coaches in the room and get them all to agree on someone, then that's a great way to do it. He's committed to excellence. I'm very excited to what he's going to bring to the table, and I know he's going to build on the traditions and the success that we have in place right now, but I also know that he's going to be looking for ways to make us even better," end quote. Torres's grasp of the geographical challenges of hiring coaches and traveling long distances in West Texas was a major theme of his introductory press conference Wednesday at the MISD administration building. Torres admitted that hiring coaches in West Texas is tough. Torres shared a story of how Felt and he went the extra mile to sell Midland and the school district when they were interested in hiring then Monahan's boys basketball coach Brad Reese for the same position at Midland High. Quote, "We had to convince him to come interview," Torres said. "We had to convince him that it was the place he was supposed to be," end quote. Torres and Felt drove to Monahan's and put on a 45-minute sales pitch to Reese in his living room. Torres, who is not a pet lover, even petted Reese's dog for 45 minutes to make it happen. Quote, "When we got him here and he interviewed, we showed him what Midland has to offer," Torres said of recruiting Reese. "I knew his daughter was a swimmer. We took him to the COM Aquatics. We introduced him to Brad Swendig and the staff out there. Show him what we have to offer. We have some of the best things in Midland, and we've got to think outside of the box to do that." We set his wife up with an interview at the same time. It is a think-outside-the-box approach, but it's not to say it can't be done, because it will be done," end quote. Torres was asked what the athletic department's policy was on scheduling private schools. "In recent years, MISD teams have competed with private schools in sports such as cross-country, swimming, and golf, but not major team sports." Quote, "We will do our best to schedule, and we will allow our coaches to schedule the schedule they feel is best for their programs," Torres said. "We've been blessed to be able to find public schools to schedule, and will continue to do what our coaches feel like is best for their programs," end quote. One of the most salient themes of Torres's presser was his professed love for Midland. The Panhandle native, who grew up in Memphis and coached 9 years in the Amarillo ISD school system, said part of the challenge is relaying to prospective coaching prospects is that Midland is a beautiful place because of the people, even though it doesn't have the scenery of trees or water. Quote, "We live in a special community, one that when we moved here in 2013 that I didn't fully grasp or understand what it meant to be a Midlander," Torres said. "It took me about a year or so to understand that. And over time, I understand that this is a special place. I said it, and I said in my interview. I really mean it, and I say it to anybody that is not from around here, or anybody that is new. Midland is special. It is unique and is special. It's special in a way that's hard to describe for people that don't live in Midland and aren't from Midland. There's no other place that I would like to be. This is a place that gives. It's a giving community," end quote. Howard said Torres intends to start an aspiring head coaches program to help assistants and junior high coaches gain the skills and training they need for expanded leadership. Torres said his former position, the director of athletics, will be posted in the coming days, and the school district will be looking to fill it as soon as possible. MISD will not require 2 board members to add items to agenda. The story was written by Ben Schaffer. The MISD board approved an amended agenda revision that will still permit 1 board member to add items to a board meeting agenda on Tuesday. On Tuesday night's meeting, there was a proposed agenda item revision that stated 2 board members must approve an agenda item for it to be placed on a board meeting agenda. District 5 Representative Brandon Hodges originally raised concerns about the agenda revision, saying it minimized dissenting opinions on the board and limited each board member's scope of governance. Every Midlander who gave a public comment on Tuesday night agreed. Former MISD board member Angel Hernandez said the proposed revision could send the district down a slippery slope. Hernandez said having to contact a board member from one district as well as another, as the revision proposed, would diminish his opinion and questions within his district. Hernandez said the proposed revision was a solution to a problem that did not exist. Hernandez, as a former MISD board member, said he used to ask himself one question when making decisions for the school district. Will this help students? Quote, if the answer is yes, proceed. If the answer is no, please rethink or vote no on it. My question to myself is, how will this help students? I can't see how, he said. Hernandez said citizens should have the right to be able to address the board anytime they are in session. Cynthia Wood said the discussion was a waste of time that could have been dedicated to discussing literacy rates, teacher retention, and other valuable district information. She said the policy would silence individual voices and encourages factions, partisanship, and backroom deals within the board. At-large City Councilwoman Robin Poole went on the record saying that the new policy would limit fair and equitable representation and silence countless resident voices now and in the future. Most Midlanders who went on the record echoed a similar statement. The board would later convene in an executive session. The policy was voted on after executive session. Hodges shared that the policy that was approved Tuesday does not require the approval of two board members to add an item to an agenda or take items off. In addition, the board president cannot remove items from the agenda that were properly submitted to the agenda without that board member's approval. Consent agenda items must be acted upon by general consent without separate discussion unless a board member requests that an item be withdrawn. Hodges, who had raised concerns about the policy, said he was happy with the decision. Quote, I represent Midlanders in District 5 to oversee MISD. The only team I belong to is Team Citizen, he stated. Analysts expect Diamondback Endeavor deal to pass scrutiny. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Monday's announcement that Diamondback Energy and Endeavor Energy are combining in a $26 billion deal immediately raised concerns about the impact on employees and questions about any regulatory hurdles the deal may face. Quote, I would not expect there to be much impact on the field employees, as the economics of drilling and production have not changed, economist Ray Perryman told a reporter Telegram by email. Rob Clark, vice president, upstream research at Wood Mackenzie, commented to the reporter Telegram by email, quote, in the recent run of Permian deals, human capital and talent retention have been central to the buyer's value creation strategy. It feels especially important in this deal, though, with both companies' deep community ties. End quote. Turning to the regulatory environment, Perryman wrote, quote, it is difficult to determine what the regulatory situation will be. A deal of this magnitude will almost certainly be reviewed for competitive concerns. We have done a lot of work on antitrust matters in the past, and the regulatory process is never fully predictable. The fact that the recent acquisitions by ExxonMobil, Chevron, and Occidental are all in the mix will also be a factor, end quote. Perryman pointed out that, quote, there remains robust competition in the industry, and there are compelling business justifications for this transaction and the others. Thus, I would fully expect that the deal will ultimately be approved, but it will likely take several months, end quote. Andrew Dittmar, senior vice president with Enverus Intelligence Research, told the Reporter Telegram by email, quote, given enhanced regulatory scrutiny on oil and gas deals from the FTC, Diamondback has allowed a longer than would otherwise be anticipated closing period, with the deal set to close by the fourth quarter of 2024. In line with other transactions, we anticipate the FTC will request additional information and prolong the review process, but ultimately sign off on the deal, end quote. Alex Beaker, research director, corporate research for Wood Mackenzie, doesn't expect the Federal Trade Commission to block the deal, but sees the potential for problems ahead. He noted to the Reporter Telegram by email that the deal is estimated to close in the final quarter of 2024. Quote, but with a backlog of deals on the FTC's desk, is there any risk to this timeline? Occidental received a second request from the FTC with regard to its acquisition of Crown Rock, making a first quarter close for that deal unlikely. A blockage by the FTC of Diamondback Endeavor still seems unlikely, but at some point, does continued Midland Basin concentration raise red flags? End quote. According to Wood Mackenzie, the combined Diamondback Endeavor entity will operate nearly 50% of production in the Midland Basin, and six companies will now produce over 700,000 barrels per day in the Permian Basin. Cold front coming. After a warm Thursday, the next cold front arrives in West Texas on Friday, sending wind chills to the teens by Saturday. The story was written by Anthony Franzi, newsroom meteorologist. The weather in the Permian Basin this time of year can be an absolute roller coaster. If you've lived here long enough, you've probably heard the saying, if you don't like the weather in West Texas, just wait 5 minutes. That saying will hold true over the next several days. After some beautiful weather in Midland-Odessa on Thursday, a cold front will move through during the day on Friday, making for some bitter cold temperatures by Saturday morning. Keep your coats handy because winter is not quite done with us yet. Thursday's forecast. If you want to get outside and enjoy the weather, Thursday will be a great time to do that. Morning low temperatures will drop to the upper 30s and low 40s. A bit of patchy fog is also possible across the Permian Basin. After that, we'll experience a quick warm-up throughout the day. Temperatures will rise into the 50s by 10 a.m. and quickly reach the 60s just after 11 a.m. Temperatures continue rising fast into the afternoon as highs reach the 71 to 73 degree range in Midland, Odessa. That's nearly 10 degrees above average for mid-February. Add in partly cloudy skies and light winds at 10 miles per hour, and we're looking at a beautiful day to spend outdoors. Cold front taking aim. By early Friday morning, the next cold front will be located in the Texas Panhandle, getting set to move into the Permian Basin. The front will likely move into Midland, Odessa in the mid to late morning between 8 and 11 a.m. Temperatures will not drop much at first, as the coldest air will be a bit delayed with this particular cold front. That's why high temperatures are still expected to be in the low to mid-60s Friday afternoon. Chillier weather arrives late as temperatures drop to the 40s after 9 p.m. Friday. The coldest air will surge into West Texas overnight and into Saturday morning. That's when temperatures fall to near or slightly below freezing, between 30 and 33 degrees in the Permian Basin. Wind speeds will rise to 20 to 30 miles per hour during the early morning too, resulting in wind chill values as low as 18 degrees in Midland, Odessa. We will stay chilly throughout the day on Saturday, but temperatures will be well above freezing, rising to the mid to upper 40s during the afternoon. One more chilly night is expected Saturday night, as the overnight lows drop into the low 30s once again. Quick warm-up coming. West Texas temperatures will rise fast Sunday and heading into next week. After the cold day on Saturday, highs will reach the low 60s by Sunday afternoon after bright sunshine. After that, each day will get progressively warmer. Monday's high temperatures will reach the low to mid-70s. By Tuesday, highs reach the upper 70s in Midland, Odessa, and the 80s will be possible for the first time this year by the middle of the week. Any rain? Midland, Odessa has only received 0.24 inches of precipitation so far in 2024. That's only 25% of the average precipitation through the middle of February. Unfortunately, there is no rain in the forecast for at least the next 7 days, possibly staying dry through the end of February. Stay tuned to MRT.com for forecast updates.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, February 15th, 2024. Entertainment. Three things to do in Midland, February 16th through 20th. By B.K. Richter. Tiny canvas painting. Restore your inner artist by pushing creative boundaries and attempting to create a mini masterpiece. This monthly class, sponsored by the Midland County Public Library, is offered to adults from 4:30 to 5:30 p.m. this Friday. The location is the library at the plaza, downtown, 301 West Missouri. An evening of jazz. The UTPB Jazz Kettle is the primary jazz ensemble for the University of Texas Permian Basin. The name Kettle is sourced from the term for a group of falcons. The mission of the group is to advocate for the study of jazz music and to serve as musical ambassadors for the region. The UTPB Jazz Kettle Band plans to feature producer, trumpeter, vocalist, and writer Willie Murillo. Murillo, hailing from Los Angeles, can be heard on a significant number of film soundtracks, albums, and television productions. The artist has worked with stars such as Christina Aguilera, Stevie Wonder, and Tony Bennett. The concert is slated for Friday at 7:30 p.m. at Midland College, 3600 North Garfield. Shenyun. Audience members can experience what is being hailed as the beauty of ancient China when this traveling masterpiece comes to the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. The presentation features one of the world's most ancient dance systems, classical Chinese dance, along with rich backdrops and all original orchestral works. Prices for the show range from $80 to $150 for seats. Tickets by phone are available by dialing 800-514-3849. The show is slated for Tuesday, February 20th at 7:30 p.m. Please note, children under the age of 4 will not be admitted to the show. What's Up in Midland This Month by Scott Nunn. At the Arts Council of Midland, the open show, now through February 25th. On Colorado Street, Downtown Farmers Market, new location, every Saturday. At Golf Course Road, Church of Christ, Food Truck Fridays, every Friday. At the Horseshoe, Raylana's Spring Consignment, February 18th through 21st. Rig Zone Career Fair, February 21st. Sun County Region Volleyball Tournament, February 24th and 25th. At the Midland Historical Society, Sea of Grass, Midland and the West Texas Frontier, at the Midland County History Museum, Thursday through Saturday, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. At Midland Animal Services, Rescue Runners, every first and third Saturday. At Riley's Bar and Grill, Burgers and Bands, every Wednesday. At the Senior Center, Line Dancing Class, every Tuesday. At Tall City Brewing Company, Geeks Who Drink Trivia, every Tuesday. At Texas Sun Winery, Paint Party, February 27th. Live music with Groove City, February 16th. Live music with CPR Acoustics, February 23rd. At the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center, Wheel of Fortune Live, February 16th. The all-new 2024 Shen Yun, February 20th. Drum Tao 2024, February 25th. Bluey's Big Play, February 28th and 29th. At the Waystone, Super Bowl Saturday. Monthly Puzzle Race, February 17th.
Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, February 15th. Christy Ray Calhoun, age 58, of Midland, passed away on February 9th at her home, surrounded by her sisters. She was born on December 15th, 1965, and raised in Midland, Texas. The youngest of three daughters born to Dolly Jean, Williamson, and Carl Rayford Calhoun. Christy grew up in rural Midland. A 1984 graduate of Midland High School, she attended Tarleton State University. Her professional career was in property management. Christy is preceded in death by her mother, Dolly Calhoun, and her husband, Billy LeHue. She is survived by her companion, James Hicks, stepson, Clay LeHue, and their children, Daxton and Lennox, her father, Rayford Calhoun, her two sisters, Vicky Saxe and Rainey Walker. Memorial services honoring Christy's life will be at 2 p.m. on Thursday, February 15th at First Methodist Church, 300 North Main Street in Midland. Reception will immediately follow the service at the church. Her service will also be live-streamed on the First Methodist Church YouTube channel. In lieu of flowers, please consider memorials to Professional Firefighters Association of Midland, Attention Benevolence Fund, 105 North G Street, Midland, Texas, or donate to First Methodist Church of Midland. David Todd Rydell, age 68, loving husband, father, grandfather, and friend, passed away on January 28th. David was born to Marjo and Harold Rydell in San Angelo, Texas, on March 2, 1955. David grew up in Odessa, but moved to Midland in early adulthood. He lived in Midland while raising his children and called it home for most of his life. David was a master heating and air conditioning technician. A memorial service to honor the life of David Rydell will be held on March 2nd at Kelview Heights Baptist Church in Midland, Texas, at 1 p.m. He is preceded in death by his parents, Marjo and Harold Rydell. David is survived by his devoted wife, Carol Rydell, his children, Marley Reed and husband Robert, Amy Rydell, Johnny Rydell and wife Natasha, Jake Rydell and wife Amber, Samuel Rydell and his bonus California kids, Kristen Hendrickson and husband Tommy, and Ryan Bagwell, as well as his 12 grandchildren. His brothers, Tim Rydell and wife Sherry, and Hal Rydell, and several nieces and nephews. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be sent to the Alzheimer's Association. Monsignor James Bridges of Midland passed away on Thursday, February 8th. A rosary will be recited at 7 p.m. Thursday, February 15th, at St. Stephen's Catholic Church. Funeral Mass will be at 10 a.m. Friday, February 16th, at St. Stephen's Catholic Church. Monsignor James Bridges and his twin sister were born in Plainview, Texas, on August 15, 1929, and raised in La Mesa, Texas, by his grandparents in the Baptist Church. At 20 years old, he was managing the biggest restaurant in La Mesa, Texas, where the local Catholic priest often patronized. His relationship with that priest led him to extensive study of the history of Christianity and the Catholic Church, and he fell in love with the Church. He converted to Catholicism and entered the seminary in Louisville, Kentucky. He was ordained in 1962. He is survived by his adopted son, Mimo Hernandez, of Midland, Texas. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Christopher Edward Holmquist, age 74, of Midland, passed away on February 12th. Born in Sweetwater, Texas, on October 29, 1949, he built fond childhood memories with his beloved grandparents, Claude and Edna Laughlin. After graduating from high school, he served in the Army from 1969 to 1971, rising through the ranks of tank commander and first sergeant of Charlie Company. He is preceded in death by his mother, Jean Sutton, and he leaves behind daughters Abby Evans and Christia Holmquist, brothers Robert and Stephen Holmquist, and grandsons Cooper and Cash Evans. A visitation will be held from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. on Friday, February 16th, at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to St. Jude Children's Hospital. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Sandra Davis Russell of Odessa passed away on February 13th in Odessa. Graveside services will be held on February 17th at 10 a.m. at American Heritage Cemetery. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory in Midland.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I'm reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Thursday, February 15th. FBI warns of romance scams on Valentine's Day. As Valentine's Day arrives, FBI El Paso is warning residents of an expected surge of romance confidence scams around Valentine's Day. In 2023, Internet Crime Complaint Center IC3 reports showed at least 50 West Texans reported falling victim to a romance scam. The West Texas victims lost over $903,000. FBI El Paso estimates 2 to 3 times that number of victims never report the crime. In a confidence romance scam, victims are lured into thinking they are in a relationship with a friend or romantic partner, then are tricked into sending money, financial information, or personal information to the criminal. They may also be deceived into laundering money. Romance scammers follow a well-rehearsed script that has worked before and often view this scam as a full-time job. Special agents have noted they may wait for months developing the relationship before asking for anything of value. Scammers often use your likes to become the perfect partner and getting the victim to lower their guard. John Morales, special agent in charge of the FBI El Paso field office, said in a news release, "Victims may feel embarrassed, but it's important to come forward and contact the FBI if you suspect your online admirer is a scammer, so we can help bring them to justice before they break someone else's heart and bank account." The following are examples of common red flags of romance scams, as well as tips to better protect yourself. The scammer may promise to meet in person but gives excuses as to why they can't. The scammer will ask for money once they gain your trust. Typically, they explain they have an owed debt, need financial assistance, or they ask for travel funds. The scammer will request money through methods that may be hard to be traced and hard to get back. The scammer may ask to leave a dating service or social media site to communicate directly. How to protect yourself? Be careful what you post and make public online. If you suspect a scam, stop communicating with the person immediately. Conduct a reverse image search of the person's photos. If it is associated with another name or profile, it is likely a scam. Take things slow and ask a lot of questions. Never send money to someone you have only communicated with online or by phone. If you suspect you are involved in a romance scam or you have fallen victim, report the incident to the FBI's IC3 by visiting www.ic3.gov. House Intelligence Committee Chair warns of a serious national security threat. The Republican head of the House Intelligence Committee urged the Biden administration on Wednesday to declassify information about what he called a serious national security threat. A senior congressional aide speaking to the Associated Press pointed to concerns about Russian anti-satellite weapons. Representative Mike Turner gave no details about the nature of the threat, and the Biden administration also declined to address it. But several leading lawmakers, including House Speaker Mike Johnson, cautioned against being overly alarmed. The congressional aide said he understood that the threat relates to a space-deployed Russian anti-satellite weapon that may or may not already have been launched. Such a weapon could pose a major danger to U.S. satellites that transmit billions of bytes of data each hour. The aide, speaking on condition of anonymity due to the sensitivity of the matter, said it was not yet clear if the Russian weapon had nuclear capability, but said that is the fear. Turner earlier Wednesday sent an email to members of Congress saying his committee had identified an urgent matter with regard to a destabilizing foreign military capability that should be known to all congressional policymakers. He encouraged them to come to a SCIF, a secure area, to review the intelligence. Turner has been a voice for stronger U.S. national security, putting him at odds with some Republican colleagues who favor a more isolationist approach. He has called for the renewal of a key U.S. government surveillance tool, which some fellow Republicans and liberal Democrats have raised privacy objections. And he supports continuing U.S. military aid for Ukraine in its war against Russia at a time that the funding remains uncertain because of opposition in the Republican-led House. Johnson said he was not at liberty to disclose the classified information, but he just wants to assure everybody steady hands are at the wheel. We're working on it, and there's no need for alarm, he told reporters at the Capitol. Democratic Representative Jim Himes, the ranking member of the Intelligence Committee, said in a statement that the classified information is significant, but not a cause for panic. The Senate Intelligence Committee said it has been tracking the issue. We continue to take this matter seriously and are discussing an appropriate response with the administration, Senator Mark Warner, the Democratic Committee Chairman, and Senator Marco Rubio, the Republican Vice Chairman, said in a statement. In the meantime, we must be cautious about potentially disclosing sources and methods that may be key to preserving a range of options for U.S. action. The rapidly evolving threat in space was one of the primary reasons that the U.S. Space Force was established in 2019. A lot of that threat has to do with new capabilities that China and Russia have already developed that can intervene with critical satellite-based U.S. communications, such as GPS and the ability to quickly detect missile launches. In recent years, the U.S. has seen both China and Russia pursue new ways to jam satellites, intercept their feeds, blind them, shoot them down, and even potentially grab them with a robotic arm to pull them out of their programmed orbits. One of the key missions of the Space Force is to train troops skilled in detecting and defending against those threats. In the 2020 Defense Space Strategy, the Pentagon said, China and Russia presented the greatest strategic threat in space due to their aggressive development of counter-space abilities and their military doctrine calling for extending conflict to space. The White House and lawmakers expressed frustration at how Turner raised his concerns. His announcement appeared to catch the Biden administration off guard. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan told reporters at the White House that he already had been due to brief Turner and other senior congressional leaders on Thursday. Sullivan did not disclose the topic or provide any other details related to Turner's statement. I'm focused on going to see him, sit with him as well as the other House members of the Gang of Eight tomorrow, Sullivan said. And I'm not in a position to say anything further from this podium at this time. He acknowledged it was not standard practice to offer such a briefing. I'll just say that I personally reached out to the Gang of Eight. It is highly unusual, in fact, for the National Security Advisor to do that, Sullivan said. He said he had reached out earlier this week. Johnson said he sent a letter last month to the White House requesting a meeting with the president to discuss the serious national security issue that is classified. He said Sullivan's meeting was in response to his request. District unveils campus recommendations to help make Ector County ISD campuses more efficient and to institute some cost savings, officials have devised a plan to bring families back together and provide more high-quality seats. The ECISD Board of Trustees on Tuesday night heard that the plan impacts 7 campuses. Reasons for the proposal include bringing families back together again in the kindergarten through 5th grade neighborhood schools, so parents don't have to travel to multiple schools to pick up their children. Right-sizing the schools, so maximizing the efficiency of the school's facility use to level out enrollment among the schools. Give children more access to high-quality seats in A and B-rated schools. Expand pre-kindergarten and expand choice school options for families. Pease will be an IB elementary, and Alamo becomes a New Tech Network elementary, which will feed into the New Tech Middle School plan to come online in 2026. Burleson, currently a kindergarten through fifth grade, into an early education center, which would save $690,273.55 for a year. Pease, Noel, and Zavala will become kindergarten through fifth grade schools. Zavala is currently pre-kindergarten through second grade. Travis is third through fifth grade. Noel is grades 3 through 5. Pease is pre-kindergarten through second. Travis will be repurposed, and there is not a specific plan for it right now. Travis cost savings is $566,454.09. Staff will have options to move to other ECISD campuses. It was recommended to reassign Burleson students to San Jacinto and Noel Elementary schools for the 2024-25 school years. San Jacinto is an A-rated school under previous state accountability ratings. Associate Superintendent of School and Student Support Alicia Siverson said, "There is no available space at Carver and Lamar Early Education Centers and no room for expansion." ECISD currently partners with YMCA to provide education for 3-year-old pre-kindergarten students. Pease is set to become an elementary international baccalaureate program, and Alamo STEAM Academy will become a New Tech Network school. George H.W. Bush New Tech Odessa will become a 6th through 12th grade campus. Superintendent Scott Meary said since he's been at ECISD, he has heard from parents and board members having comments about having to drive from school to school. Meary said now is the right time to transition them back to the kindergarten through fifth grade schools, as they are performing better now. He added that the district has been talking about these plans for a while and knew that we were eventually going in that direction. The efficiencies at Travis that are really looking at our under-enrolled elementary schools. The last two bond committees have brought that up, that we have some campuses that are underutilized, and could the district look at more efficiency using those, Mary said. Tuesday night was the first of multiple steps. We don't want to shutter Travis, he said. Chief of Schools Keeley Boyer said, the recommended next steps are to establish attendance boundaries for Zavala, Travis, Pease, Noel, and San Jacinto. Staff meetings with Human Resources to discuss options with Travis and Burleson will begin February 14th, and family meetings will start February 15th to answer questions and get feedback. The board also authorized that the superintendent to negotiate and execute a contract for property at 5038 Andrews Highway. Murray said the 21 acres off 52nd Street will be used for a new transportation facility. A new transportation facility was part of the bond approved by voters November 7th. The current transportation facility will be maintained by the district. Call for artists. Artwork needed for Community Art Gallery for Odessa City Hall. Odessa Arts wants to see your art on the walls of Odessa's City Hall. Selected works will be displayed in council chambers on the fifth floor of Odessa's City Hall from April 10, 2024 through March 30, 2025. The application period is now open to all Permian Basin artists through March 15, 2024. Artwork must follow guidelines adopted by City Council, must be assembled and ready to hang on delivery to the City of Odessa. At the conclusion of the exhibit, the City of Odessa may exercise its privilege to purchase one of the pieces to grow its permanent collection. All two-dimensional artwork submitted must be framed or mounted and ready to hang. Canvas art will be attached to the ceiling and will need to be aptly prepared for this. All three-dimensional artwork submitted must be self-supporting or include a stand. Art presented in an electronic medium must be accompanied by appropriate audio and video equipment. For more information and to apply, visit odessaarts.submittable.com/submit. Here's the latest on the investigation into the shooting at Joel Osteen's megachurch. A shooter's motive for opening fire in celebrity pastor Joel Osteen's megachurch remains unclear 3 days after the violence. While her criminal record and documented history of mental illness come under greater scrutiny, police say Janice Marino entered the Lakewood Church with her 7-year-old son on Sunday and began firing into a hallway, sending worshipers scrambling for safety. 2 people were wounded in the attack, including Marino's son, who was shot in the head and remains hospitalized in critical condition. Marino, 36, was shot and killed by 2 off-duty officers working security at the Houston church, according to authorities. Here's what to know about the shooting. What happened Sunday? Gunshots rang out inside the massive church, formerly the home of the NBA's Houston Rockets, terrifying worshipers just before 2 p.m. Marino entered the church wearing a trench coat and backpack and armed with a long rifle, police say. She pointed a gun at an unarmed security guard and once inside began firing. Marino did not reach the main sanctuary, however, and was killed after exchanging gunfire with 2 off-duty officers, a Houston police officer and an agent with the Texas Alcoholic Beverage Commission. Marino's son was struck in the head, police said, while a man in his 50s suffered a gunshot wound to his hip. Marino told officers she had a bomb, but authorities said that no explosives or hazardous material was found at the scene, police said. Police said Marino also carried a .22 caliber rifle that she did not fire during the shooting. What was the shooter's motive? Few details have emerged about Marino's motivation, what it could have been, and police have given no details about where and how she obtained the rifle used in the attack. Police on Monday searched her residence in Conroe, a city more than 50 miles north of the church. Investigators found anti-Semitic writings by Marino. Houston Police Commander Chris Hussig noted that Marino's former in-laws are Jewish. The rifle used in the shooting also had a Palestine sticker on the buttstock. Hussig described Marino as a lone wolf who was not acting as any part of a larger group. He also said that she sometimes used both male and female aliases, but investigators had determined through interviews and past police reports that she identified as female. Marino further had a documented history of mental illness and several misdemeanor convictions. Among other things, investigators are examining a dispute between Marino and her ex-husband's family, authorities said. Wally Carranza, Marino's former mother-in-law, said in court filings from Marino's 2020 22 divorce, that she tried to alert authorities about the danger her ex-daughter-in-law posed, but authorities failed to take action. In those filings, Carranza alleged Marino had a history of threatening people with guns or being careless with how they were stored, including keeping an unlocked gun in her son's diaper bag and threatening to shoot her ex-husband while their son slept in the back seat of their car. Marino's criminal history included charges of forging a $100 bill, a 2009 assault conviction for kicking a detention officer, which resulted in a 180-day county jail sentence, and a 2022 misdemeanor count for unlawfully carrying a weapon. How was she able to buy the rifle? Texas has fewer restrictions on buying and owning guns than any other states. Marino's misdemeanor convictions would not have stopped her from purchasing a gun in the Lone Star State, and while her history of mental illness could have triggered federal restrictions, legal experts said there's not yet enough information that's publicly available to say. Houston police said Marino was put under emergency detention by officers in 2016, but did not elaborate. In Texas, an emergency detention is not an arrest, but allows an officer to detain a person with mental illness if they pose a substantial risk of serious harm to themselves or others. However, not everyone who is detained in those situations loses their right to own a gun, said Lindsay Nichols, policy director at the Guilford's Law Center to Prevent Gun Violence. People who are in mental health crisis can be temporarily taken into custody, Nichols said, and sometimes doctors decide that they're no longer a danger and release them. Others forego a formal process in the courts, usually within a couple of weeks, wherein a judge officially commits them to a mental health institution, Nichols said. Only then does the person lose his or her rights to own a gun in Texas and most other states. Texas also lacks a formal red flag law, which generally allows law enforcement or family members to ask a judge to order the seizure or surrender of guns from someone who is deemed dangerous, often because of mental health concerns or threats of violence. Nichols stressed that not all the facts about Marino have come out. She said sometimes records for someone's official commitment to a mental institution fail to make it into the background check system, but Texas has generally put some efforts into preventing that. Wesley Wittig, a Fort Bend County District Attorney's Office prosecutor, said Marino's mental health history did not come up in the 2022 misdemeanor case against her, but noted there also isn't a comprehensive mental health tracking system to flag such issues. The shooting is one of many that have involved shooters who legally obtained guns despite criminal history and mental health problems. Who is Joel Osteen? Osteen, 60, took the helm of Lakewood Church after John Osteen, his father, and the church's founding pastor, passed away in 1999. The church has grown dramatically under his leadership and is regularly attended by 45,000 people weekly, making it the third largest megachurch in the U.S., according to the Hartford Institution for Religious Research. Osteen is a leader in promoting what is known as the prosperity gospel, a belief that God wants his followers to be wealthy and healthy. He is the author of several best-selling books, including Your Best Life Now, 7 Steps to Living at Your Full Potential. His televised services reach about 100 countries, and renovating his church's arena cost nearly $100 million.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.